Good evening. The images and the stories coming out of the Bahamas tonight are nothing short of searing. A man watches his wife drown and barely makes it to safety himself. People in jet skis going into the teeth of the storm, then going back and back yet again to rescue neighbors, to rescue strangers, knowing they could lose their lives doing it. Also knowing it's too important not to try. Tonight, we're seeing what Hurricane Dorian did to the Abaco Islands, where entire communities are covered in water and some have simply been obliterated. Roads washed away, an airport there wiped out, hospitals and other emergency facilities there and across the Bahamas flooded. We're learning, too, the conditions in Freeport are much worse than expected. Our CNN's Patrick Opman, who joins us shortly, saw it firsthand as ordinary citizens made trip after trip into the floodwaters, risking their lives to save others. Take a look.
How many people are out there still?
A few hundred.
A few hundred?
Yeah, a lot of homes out over here.
And it's tough to get out there and get them.
It's tough.
How long are you going to keep doing it?
Until we get everybody. We Bahamians. We're not going to stop until we get everybody in.
We're going to speak with Patrick shortly. We're monitoring late word from the authorities in the Bahamas about conditions there and casualties. First, though, a new track for the hurricane and new word on where on the East Coast could get hit the hardest. And for that, we turn to CNN's Jennifer Gray. So where is it? What's the latest?
Well, Anderson, I think as we move forward, really the Carolinas is where we need to focus on, because that's where we could see a potential landfall as well as the biggest impacts moving forward. It is basically paralleling the coast of Florida. Finally picked up some forward speed today. So moving out of Grand Bahama Island, their conditions will continue to improve, but it's still a 110 mile per hour wind storm with gusts of 130, and the wind field is expanding. And that's interesting because tropical storm force winds now extend 175 miles from the center. So the storm is just sort of spreading out a little bit. You can see these rain bands pretty heavy on the rain on the west side of that storm. And that's pushing all the rain bands, the rain, the wind into portions of Florida and getting some very heavy rain right now. That's going to continue. We will have the potential for flooding in Florida as well as very gusty winds, tropical storm force winds. This is going to move up to the north and then eventually bend back to the east. And that's where it gets very interesting, especially for the Carolinas, Anderson.
So do you expect it to continue picking up speed as it moves up the coast, or is it going to kind of get slower?
Well, it is expected to pick up speed, and that is good news for the Carolinas. Yes, we could possibly see a landfall there. It could be a Category 2. But when you talk about faster speed, you're not talking about as long duration of the winds as well as the rain. And so that's a best case scenario when you have a storm like this, is for it to get in and get out. So by Friday afternoon, this storm will be off the coast of North Carolina, but they still will feel a lot of impacts from this.
So when you talk about the Carolinas, is there a particular city or area that we should particularly be looking at and that people should be warned about?
Right. I think Charleston is going to be a very vulnerable area in South Carolina because of how low-lying it is. And any push of water that goes in can definitely flood Charleston very easily. If you're familiar with that area, you know exactly what we're talking about. And you will see those outer rain bands there as early as tomorrow afternoon. And then when you talk about the forecast winds, we're going to still see very gusty winds across the Carolinas as well. North Carolina, we know that it's very vulnerable there with the Outer Banks and all that push of water in to the Barrier Islands. We're going to see a lot of beach erosion and things like that. So we do have those hurricane watches up for North Carolina, hurricane warnings even for South Carolina and portions of North Carolina, as well as Florida. So Florida's still feeling the impacts, but we do have to look forward and see where this is going to make maybe a bigger impact in days to come. We could see 4 to 7 feet of storm surge across portions of South Carolina and North Carolina by Thursday and Friday. Anderson, we've been talking about this storm for more than a week now, and it's still not over, and still could see some pretty big impacts in days ahead.
Wow. Jennifer Gray, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. A moment ago, we showed you a portion of what Patrick Opman saw today in some of the hardest hit areas. He joins us now from Freeport in the Bahamas. Patrick, I mean, it's just the litany of things you saw, of the people you talked to today, it's really just extraordinary, a lot of the things you witnessed. Just talk a little bit about what the day has been like for the people there.
It has been a good day in the sense that for the first time, they were able to get in boats and jet skis. Some of these boats, not much bigger than rowboats, Anderson, and go out and look for friends and family and strangers and try and rescue them. It's an all-volunteer Navy here. There was no organization. It was people who came out using their own gasoline, their own boats, risking their own lives to save others.
One jet ski ride, one boat trip at a time, these Bahamians are saving the lives of their family, neighbors, and complete strangers. They launch from a bridge that is now underwater. Theirs is a dangerous mission. Hurricane force winds are still raging here. Howard Armstrong was rescued after his house flooded to the ceiling.
Right.
His house was one of hundreds lost as storm surge from Dorian swallowed whole neighborhoods. Armstrong's wife, Lynn, didn't make it.
It came over the roof. I would imagine 21 feet at least. We were doing all right until the water kept coming up and all the appliances were going around the house like a washing machine. That's probably I got hit with something in there. And my poor little wife got hypothermia and she was standing on top of the kitchen cabinets until they disintegrated. And then I kept with her and she just drowned on me.
I'm so sorry.
I know. So
how did you get out?
I got out. I had a big boat anchored in there. I'm a crab fisherman and I have a 40 footer on a mooring which stayed there. So I didn't even think it was there. So I had got out of the house after my wife drowned and because you couldn't be in there anymore. And I had no tools to chop a hole in the roof, in the ceiling. So I saw my boat was still there and I swam. I took a chance and swam out to it.
There's no power on Grand Bahama Island, no running water, sporadic cell service at best. Submerged cars block many roads. Maybe the last thing working here is this all-volunteer crew of boaters risking their lives to save lives. Dorian fights them every trip they make.
People coming with what they have, the jet skis they have, they are dealing with horrible weather conditions. It's not safe to be out on a boat right now. It's not safe to be out here at all, and yet they say they know there are people out there.
While we're there, winds flip a jet ski, and the rescuers have to halt their efforts. Rescuer Rochelle Daniel says there isn't much time left.
They were exhausted. Some we had to carry. Some couldn't even make it. Some we put on a jet ski, returned the whole jet ski over because they couldn't hold their weight up. First thing we found was my brother. He was clinging onto a tree, and he made us safe. But we were unable to locate his wife at the moment. We hope that she's okay. But the rescue goes on. We had a lot of people supporting us. Everybody working as a team right here, you know. It's very hard, but you know what I'm saying? But we shall overcome.
How are you doing? You made it. You're safe. Yeah.
Dozens have been rescued, but many more remain in total desperation as they spend their third night waiting for salvation.
Patrick, I mean, that's just
and
incredible.
Anderson, again, just to, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. First of all, the fact that these
incredible.
Are civilians doing this, helping one another, and that man, Howard Armstrong, I'm not even sure I cannot believe it. I mean, he saw his wife drown in front of her. In front of him.
And he refuses to leave until her body is recovered. He refuses to leave that site until her body is recovered. Of course, the rescuers say they have to prioritize the living, and there are still hundreds of people out there spending the night without food or water or electricity and probably losing hope at this point. One first good piece of news we've seen since this whole storm began is just a little while ago, we saw what looked like a Coast Guard helicopter fly over the island. You can only hope that the skies have cleared enough now that they can begin tomorrow the rescues. They have their work cut out for them. There are people who don't have much time left here.
Yeah, I mean, just in that microcosm that you came upon, you know, the man talked about rescuing his brother, but his wife they couldn't find. They still haven't been able to find her, and that man saw his wife drown. There's no what's so horrifying about this is we're just getting glimpses of this. I mean, thank goodness you and your team and others are there to show it, to show the world what's going on. But we're really only getting glimpses of the horror of what is happening at this stage.
Howard Armstrong, he said when his wife died and he knew that he didn't have much time left either if he stayed there, he left his wife behind. He swam underneath all the debris down to his front door. He swam out of the front door. He's got bruises all over his body from the things he collided to in the dark. He swam up, and then the first thing he did is not try to save himself. He swam over to his neighbor's house, a woman who had been calling to him all night long, and he and his wife had called back to her and said, "We're going to come get you, we're going to come get you." He got into the house, and he said he saw her dead body, and at that point he knew there was nothing left for him to do, and he tried to swim. He was able to find a boat, and the boat rescued him. He's a man who's in shock, who has nothing but the clothes on his back.
I mean, it was like when he said to you that his wife drowned in front of him, it was almost like realizing it for the first time. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary what's happening. It's horrific. And Patrick, I really appreciate you and your team continuing to work around the clock as you have been. Thank you. When last we spoke with Chef Jose Andres, he and his organization, World Central Kitchen, they were gearing up to do what they've done in so many other recent disasters. And we talk about an organization. I mean, this is Jose, and this is volunteers and some hardworking staff people who have been learning storm after storm, disaster after disaster. We first met up with them in Harvey when they started doing this. We met up with them in San Juan in Puerto Rico and traveled with them across the island, where they fed hundreds of thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of meals on a chain of islands with limited access in and out in the middle of such a powerful storm. Jose Andres today was able to get to the Abaco Islands. Today, all the preparation, dedication, they're being put to the test, especially on Abaco, where Chef Andres returned from just moments ago. I spoke to him by phone. Jose, you just helicoptered out of Abaco. What did it look like from the air?
Well, you know, at the very beginning, as you come into the island, it's very strong because all of a sudden, it doesn't look like the trees, they've been affected by the hurricane at all. And it's some very nice homes that also those homes, for some reason, they are untouched. But in the moment you are 5-10 minutes over the island, at the very beginning, you will find the National Forest of Abaco. Is one moment that there you see all of the sudden total destruction of the forest, all the palm trees, all the trees broken, and all of a sudden, yes, you see every single home very much with the roofs gone. We were able to land in a heliport in a hotel called Abaco Resort, and they were waiting for us. They had the heliport clean, and we were able to drop there, I think, 2,000 sandwiches and over 1,000 pieces of oranges. And it was great because we were able to do initial contact, and I left there, one of my team members, Sam, to have enough time to do some intelligence work tonight, to start distributing the sandwiches and start learning where we're going to be doing our first kitchen.
How does that next step take place? Because, I mean, when you see the images from the air, which we're showing right now, it just looks like street after street of just rubble. You see some, a lot of water still on the ground. You see houses that have simply disappeared. Where do you begin when you go on the ground? What do you actually then do tomorrow?
I've not been able to move much around the island because I had a very short window to arrive with a helicopter and leave. Actually, I was going to stay. But then what happens is as we were unloading and moving away the sandwiches, another helicopter arrived, and I got a phone call that was maybe better for me to come back to start planning. So I took that helicopter almost like it was the subway. It's been a lot of helicopters in and out, taking some people out of the island. So the next steps is this, is which of the hotels, which of the buildings, the structures are good, in this case for us, an NGO that feeds, to do our first kitchen there. That's going to be the most important thing for us. But yes, what you're describing, what we're seeing on the videos, is every single roof, many of the homes. Where I was is next to a marina. The heliport is almost by the sea, and I saw almost 20 big boats that they were out in the street or on top of homes. Every single ship on the marina just left the water and I guess flew away, and some of them even were 50, 60 meters inland.
There's some 17,000 to 20,000 people who live on those islands. You're able to bring 2,000 sandwiches, which is extraordinary to get that amount of sandwiches, that amount of food in already. What do you have a sense of what the needs are at this point?
Yeah, we feel very much, even if many people, some people in the islands, that they have homes that they've not been somehow so damaged. I'm guessing that at the very least, we're going to be trying to be bringing between 5,000 and 7,000 units tomorrow. We only brought 2,000 because it's the maximum capacity that we could bring on the helicopter we are going to be using. But that's why I believe it's going to be so important that we start doing a kitchen right there. I'm guessing my number right now is we are going to go for 10,000 meals. If we have to go slightly higher, we will. The most important is not to cook, but is the true distribution, the true system. I already heard that some people are getting very nervous because the rumor is that the main two-foot shops in the island were kind of destroyed, were totally gone. And so, you know, people are already about to start getting a little bit nervous, rightfully so. That's why I believe it's so important for us to start bringing our mission to at least bring that peace of mind on the people that put and were ending the issue.
You said, you know, you've seen a lot of helicopters moving back and forth. Do you see a lot of people on the ground out, you know, from outside groups like yours? Is there already starting to be a presence of rescue personnel? I know the Coast Guard has been doing some operations.
The only Coast Guard I saw today was a very big plane that took the Prime Minister, the head of NEMA, and some of the American authorities. I'm guessing maybe the ambassador of the States was there, and he was trying to do a flyover to see the situation in Grand Bahama. But already I've seen a lot of videos of the U.S. Coast Guard doing a lot of work bringing injured people to the main hospital here in Nosso. It's been a lot of movement of private helicopters. I guess it's a lot of people that if they have the possibility and the means, some of those private helicopters, they've been removing also injured people. I heard from some pilots as I landed that obviously a lot of people have broken arm or broken leg and things like that. And I guess people that have the means and the possibilities, they are using every resource they can use to use those helicopters to leave the island and start moving on.
Yeah, Jose, it's amazing that you've already been able to make, 2,000 sandwiches and drop them off today. And I know you're, feeding elsewhere as well. So, Jose, thanks for the update. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Incredible work. Much more ahead on the storm, including a conversation with one of the many volunteer rescuers who are working under some of the most challenging conditions and responding to what you've already seen as almost unimaginable need. And later, the man who picked up what are now known to be the only survivors of the fire of the sea off the coast of Southern California. He'll describe what happened when the survivors came toward his boat to try to get on and what he witnessed. That and more as we continue. But a man who has just watched his wife drown swims through debris to try and save others. It both breaks your heart and fills it with hope that such people even exist. And they are not alone, whether it's on jet ski and other small vessels or trucks or whatever can get where people are stranded. You will find rescuers in the Bahamas, people like Kevin Tomlinson, who joins us now in Freeport. Kevin, I know you've been out there trying to rescue people. Tell me what it's been like and how many people, just what have you been seeing these last 24, 48 hours?
Well, Anderson, pleasure for you to have me on the show. I'm really appreciating the attention that you're giving the Bahamas. We have had so many persons out there working as a community, trying our best to help persons who are in low-lying areas. We had areas in Grand Bahama over the bridge where persons were locked in their houses. We had people sleeping in their seats for 2 days and couldn't get out and needed to be rescued. We had so many situations like this, and it's really heartbreaking. But to know that this community does what it does best, we come together and we help each other. And we've been working hard all day trying to make sure that persons got to safety.
What's
still into this night?
What's the food and water situation there now? I mean, is there anything for people to eat and drink? Is anything being handed out? I know there was a shelter, and I think the night you were there, it went from like 25 people to several hundred people in a matter of hours.
We went from 25 persons to about 400 persons in less than 2 hours.
Wow.
And that was when the storm started to really pound. And persons were just walking on foot, trying to get to some shelter. And, yeah, we do have a situation because a lot of the persons who came out abandoned their homes and they no food in their hand and no water and so forth. And we find that the shelters didn't have the food and enough food and water to accommodate that. So now we have a problem, and I think I've been telling people all day that in another 2 days or so, it's going to become really a great problem if we don't get some help. But I understand that the Prime Minister and members of NEMA are on the way. They were just waiting for the all clear to get in here to get things done. So we're looking forward to that.
You've been through storms on the island before. I think there was Hurricane Francis, if I remember. Does anything compare to what you are seeing now?
This is the worst experience I have ever had with a hurricane. And I've had about five of them probably. I've never seen it like this. When you look at what, sorry, I'm getting choked up. But when you looked and when you see what was happening around here and you look at people's lives just being displaced, the loss of lives. You know, that's something that's, you know, I can't get over that. And so this is something that really and truly we will never, ever forget as a community, ever forget. But we appreciate you for you letting the world know what's happening here, man. We really, really appreciate that, Anderson.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate all you are doing. And I mean, just so many people reaching out, so many people on jet skis trying to save neighbors. It's just extraordinary. Kevin Tomlinson, we'll check in with you again. Thank you very much. And thank you for the work you're doing. I want to give a wider view now of the tremendous impact this storm has had and will have. And we're talking about for years to come. Late this evening, I spoke with Joy Jabrillo, who's the director general for the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism. Joy, we're showing the picture of Abaco. I think it's Grand Abaco. It is extraordinary. You almost cannot tell where the sea is and where the land is. I mean, everything, it just water covers so much of it, and it's hard to even see houses standing. I mean, you can see some rooftops, but the destruction is really, it is shocking.
And if I can put it in context, as we speak about Abaco specifically in the first instance, Abaco was a very developed city, Marsh Harbor, the capital, a very developed city. And so there are reports going out that perhaps it was not. That is not the case at all. It was in terms of tourist visitor arrivals, the second largest island in terms of visitor arrivals. And really developed, really beautiful. And so when you see that level of devastation and destruction, it genuinely is heartbreaking.
I believe you have some staff missing in the islands that are hit hardest. Is that right?
That's correct. So if I speak about Abaco specifically, we are now to the point of just deep, deep concern. For three of our staff members, we've not had any contact from them. We're reaching out, using every channel possible. And so if by any miracle they're hearing this, their families want to know and we want to know.
And just in terms of hospital facilities, are there enough hospital facilities? Are you seeing, are there many wounded people at this point? Do you have any sense of an accurate death toll at this point?
So we're only obviously able to confirm the five official deaths. We do believe that number will increase. We know that there are many injured, and the injured have been and are in the process of being brought to the capital, to Nassau, for hospital treatment. Grand Bahama, our second largest hospital in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, absolutely devastated, underwater. It's totally compromised.
Yeah, and in fact, we're looking at pictures of the hospital in Freeport, and it just looks like there's water, I mean, up to, you know, people's ankles inside the hospital.
It's worse than that. It's the worst possible conditions. So everyone had to be removed. And I think this is why this is such a humanitarian issue at this stage, because when a main hospital is no longer operable or usable, and you know that there are people who are critically ill, seriously ill. When debris was flying, they acted as projectiles, so we know that there are injuries. And first of all, trying to move them to Nassau or another island where there's a clinic or a hospital and getting the right care and attention for those people is a priority.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, things people don't consider of people needing dialysis or just regular access to medication, medication that needs to be refrigerated, insulin. I mean, these are the, you know, day two and day three and day four and week one and two and three disasters that are the follow-on effects.
You are so right. You know, someone asked me just today, what do the Bahamians need? What do the people need? And I said, every single thing that you could imagine. That includes the most basic utensils, basic human needs. But when you start looking at the requirement for medicine, we just heard a plea. There was someone who was in a diabetic coma, and they were pleading with people to see if they could rescue that person. So that's the level of, you know, it's just, actually, it's distressing. I just don't know how to articulate it in any other way.
Joy, I appreciate talking to you, and I'm so sorry for what you and everyone there is going through, and I hope help is on the way and more in the coming hours and days. Thank you for talking to us.
Anderson, thank you, and thank you to the people of the world.
It's a desperate situation. A lot more straight ahead as the hurricane moves dangerously close to the U.S. mainland. We're going to check in with our correspondent along Florida's Atlantic coast and more. We have more breaking news on Hurricane Dorian, and sadly, it's breaking news on the storm. Sadly, we do not expect this to be the last time for this particular item. The death toll has just risen, according to the Bahamian prime minister. It now stands at 7. At the top of the program, we showed you the new forecast track of the storm. It has gained both forward and northward momentum. The wind field is expanding, and those winds are increasingly starting to hit Florida's Atlantic coast. Millions, of course, are in the danger zone there. Randy Kaye is in Fort Pierce for us tonight, north of Palm Beach, along the shore. What is it like where you are right now, Randy?
It's been a steady rain here, Anderson, pretty much all day since we got here. At times, we were getting pounded by the rain. The winds were really heavy. We're in a slight lull right now, but we know not to let our guard down, of course, and so do the folks in this area. But the wind was so heavy at times, Anderson, and so forceful that we could barely open the car door just to get out of the car. But we're at the Fort Pierce Inlet, so this is the entryway into the ocean from here. Behind me, I'll step out of the way so you can see it. That's a sailboat. And we found that out here hours ago. It still hasn't moved, luckily. We were a little concerned that it would be pushed from the wind, actually, onto the, more of the land. But it's in the water there at the inlet. It was likely moored, you know, out in the inlet where we found some other boats. And it was either pushed by the heavy rains and the winds to this area. It's sort of stuck on its side there. It hasn't moved very much since we got here. So that is good news. But that's exactly why they say, even though Hurricane Dorian didn't make landfall here in Florida, you still have to be concerned about those hurricane force winds that are edging dangerously close to Florida that we've been experiencing along with tropical storm force winds throughout the day here in the Fort Pierce area, Anderson.
And are evacuation orders still in place for the Barrier Islands?
For some, it seems as though where we were last night on Singer Island, that barrier island, that has been lifted. Palm Beach County evacuations have been lifted here in Fort Pierce and St. Lucie County. We just got an alert on our way over here to do this live shot with you that evacuation, mandatory evacuation, is going to be lifted at 6 a.m. Tomorrow morning. But even as we were coming in, there were police officers everywhere. The town is boarded up. The gas stations are still closed. So it's going to take some time to sort of turn that over and turn that around. Even after the evacuation orders are lifted.
Randy, I appreciate it. Thank you. I want to go now to Miguel Marquez up the coast a bit in Vero Beach, Florida. And as Randy mentioned, the winds and rains are whipping up and then calming down. Miguel, how is it where you are?
Yeah, much the same here. Evacuation orders are lifted. They were lifted much earlier today. And interestingly, as they were lifted, we've seen some of the roughest weather throughout the day, both the winds and the rain coming down. the rain coming down quite hard now, the winds picking up at times, but that storm's still about 100 miles off the coast here and moving north. As it moves north, there are evacuation orders going into effect farther north. The uncertainty of this storm is what really has people sort of unsure as to whether to come back, when to open their businesses, and how to deal with it. The reality of what's playing out in the Bahamas is not lost on people here as well. I mean, for all the people who came out here today to see the storm and to see what was going on, the Bahamas were very much on their minds, what's happening there, and to realize how they were spared a direct hit by this storm and how bad things really could have been here. And now other places farther north from here in the Carolinas and Georgia, all of them now waiting to see what exactly this storm does.
Anderson. Yeah, and obviously that's where a lot of focus now on the Carolinas. Jennifer Gray in the Weather Center was saying that. Well, that's really where she'll be watching the next day or so. Miguel, appreciate it. Coming up, I'm going to talk to the mayor of Charleston, South Carolina. The city may be extremely vulnerable from Hurricane Dorian, according to the latest forecast, as they're just saying. We'll be right back. As we mentioned, the new projected track of Hurricane Dorian has it raking Charleston, South Carolina as early as Thursday afternoon as a Category 2 hurricane. As you know, an estimated 244,000 people have already evacuated the coastal areas in and around there. John Tecklenburg is Charleston's mayor, and he joins me now. Mayor, thanks for being with us. You say the hurricane poses a triple threat for Charleston. Can you just explain what that means?
Well, we're the low country, a low-lying area. And when you have that combination, Anderson, of heavy rains and high tides and storm surge, it brings extra water right into our city. So that's our real threat and our real concern at this point. And I must share with you that Charleston is such a beautiful and hospitable city that it's really contrary to our culture to be asking people to leave town. But if you live in a low-lying area, we're asking you to still, there's still time to get out.
Yeah, well, it's also such a beautiful town. It's a hard town to leave, I know. What are those in your community doing to prepare for the storm? I assume people have been boarding up, things like that, if they're staying.
Well, absolutely. They've been battening down the hatches, as the city has with its own buildings. But we've also been sandbagging. We distributed almost 75,000 sandbags in just the last 2 days.
Wow.
We've been checking pumps and adding pumps and barricading and getting ready to actually close down streets where we know flooding will occur. Because this may sound funny, Anderson, but there'll be water in the streets, and if somebody's riding down the street, it'll actually like form a wake. And so we want to prevent that as much as we can.
And obviously, when you see the pictures from the Bahamas, I mean, that obviously, adds the concern, ratchets it up. I mean, you've been through Hurricane Matthew, Hurricane Irma. You say that if people's homes flooded for those storms, then they should absolutely evacuate for this storm. Is that right?
Absolutely. And the devastation in the Bahamas is just heartbreaking, isn't it? It's just terrible. I want this storm to pass and see what we can do to help those folks down there.
Yeah.
But, you know, Charleston has now had impacts from a storm for 5 years in a row. So we have become rehearsed, if you will, at getting ready for the storm. And then also, when it passes, of recovery and getting back to business.
So your message to the people of Charleston tonight is there is still time to get out, particularly if you are in an area that's flooded or your home is flooded in the past.
Absolutely. The lane reversal of I-26 is still active. The weather's actually nice until the storm gets here late tomorrow or tomorrow evening. There's still time to get out if you want to. If not, though, please get boarded up and hunkered down and safe as you can be. And we want Charleston tomorrow night, contrary to what you would think, to look like a ghost town.
Mayor Tecklenburg, I appreciate it. And we wish you the best. We'll check in with you tomorrow. Thank you so much. We've got more breaking news ahead, this time on the West Coast, where we have new details about the search for victims from that deadly boat fire. 20 are known dead. We'll be right back. We heard it from a top official in the Bahamas tonight and have seen it with so many storms before. What's happening there is a story that's going to play out over weeks and months, not hours and days. So even as we bring you all this breaking development tonight, it's important not to lose sight of that. And mindful of that, let's check in with Chris, see what he's working on for Cuomo Primetime, the top of the hour. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I share your concern, Coop. The pictures are so bad in terms of what we've seen even on those islands there, even on the Abacos, that I'm worried about what we don't know.
Right.
And things, you know, never get better. And it's always good to be surprised about that. So, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see. And the story of the storm is far from over. So we'll talk to some people who have some particularly harrowing tales to tell, as evidence of what so many on that island are going to deal with. We'll be checking in and continuing your coverage of the latest points on the track and what our concerns are in different areas. And then I'm going to bring in Rick Santorum, because we have natural disasters. We also have man-made disasters in the form of these mass shootings. And the idea of what would have made a difference in this particular shooting in Texas, there is a solution to stopping what happened in this particular case. There is a change you could make, and yet there's great resistance to it. We're going to debate that with the good senator tonight.
All right. And, Chris, I mean, I think what you said is so important to just keep in mind. As bad as the images are that we're seeing, we are only seeing, you know, snapshots of it. And those snapshots, you know, we're hearing about people who a man, Patrick Ottman, talked to a guy whose wife drowned in front of him in their home. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And I'm not even sure if that's included in the newest death toll, which is now 7. So let's hope those rescues continue. We'll check in with you in about 8 minutes. Appreciate it, Chris. Quick and vital programming note. Tomorrow, you join CNN and 10 presidential hopefuls. Chris is going to be there and 10 presidential hopefuls for an unprecedented Democratic presidential town hall event on the climate crisis. In attendance, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, Beto O'Rourke, Andrew Yang, and Julian Castro. All 10 candidates taking the stage on one night with their plans of how to address this critical issue. Take a look at how their plans are different, what they agree on. That's tomorrow starting at 5 p.m. Eastern. I'll be on from 8 to 9. Still to come tonight, the latest on that dive boat fire in Southern California. We have new details on some of the victims who were aboard. And I'm going to talk with a man who rescued the ship's only survivors and what he saw. It's extraordinary. Coast Guard has suspended search operations after the deadly boat fire off Southern California. It also released this new video showing the response efforts. 20 bodies, many of them high school students, have been recovered. 14 victims are still missing. Families and authorities have a lot of questions, certainly, about why more could not be done to save lives. 5 surviving crew members could provide some answers. They were picked up at sea by a man named Bob Hansen, who I spoke with. Bob, if you can just walk me through what happened that night, because I know you were on a fishing trip with your wife and you woke up to the sound of someone beating on the side of your boat.
Yes, that's correct. It was about 3:30 in the morning. We heard somebody beating on the side of the boat. So I got up, and as I went to the door of the salon, I got out and opened the door, and there were 5 guys in a rubber dinghy at the transom, and they were calling for help. And I looked out just beyond them, and here's a boat that was totally engulfed in fire at the time.
How far away was the boat that was on fire from you?
Maybe about 400 yards. It wasn't terribly far.
And how were they, the people you were rescuing? I mean, what were they?
They were pretty distraught. Several of them were crying. One of the crewmen had a badly broken leg, so he was in a lot of pain. And another crewman, he had a twisted ankle. And then we brought the rest of them on board. They were all wet. Mostly in their underwear, or they had just jumped out of bed and over the side. Then we got towels to dry them all down. I went upstairs with the captain at the time, and we hailed the Coast Guard and gave them our position. When I first saw the boat, it was totally engulfed in flames from the bow to the stern.
Wow.
And maybe 30 feet high. It was just totally helpless. There was nothing I could do.
I mean, that feeling of helplessness. I mean, you did all you could, but to have to, you know, just stay there and watch this thing burn. I can't imagine what that's like.
Oh, it was, you're totally helpless, and you know the things go through your mind. It's like, you know, had I known sooner, you know, or they'd have gotten off, I could have picked them all up.
Bob Hansen, yeah. I appreciate again what you did, and thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thanks, Andrew. Nice talking to you.
Well, obviously a lot more to learn about what happened. The news continues right now. I want to hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Primetime. Chris?
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.